This is Report to Wyoming.
I'm Colby Fedor, and today I'm talking to Emily Schumann. She is the director for the Rocky Mountain Americans with Disabilities Association Center. She works tirelessly to make sure that the public understands the rights and responsibilities of employers under the Disabilities Act. She's an accomplished writer, and she also contributes op-ed pieces and informational articles and hosts the center's popular podcast, which features many noted guests, including Senator Tammy Duckworth and former Major League Baseball All-Star Jimmy Abbott. It was wonderful to get to chat with her, and I learned all kinds of things about what the Rocky Mountain ADA is all about, so I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, so I'm the director of the Rocky Mountain ADA Center. So Rocky Mountain ADA Center is one of 10 federally funded ADA technical assistance training and research centers. So as the director, I manage the staff and operations and just kind of the daily ins and outs of the services that the center provides.
Oh, cool. Where are you guys located?
So we're located in Greeley, Colorado, based out of the University of Northern Colorado. So we have offices there, but our staff is actually a little bit scattered throughout Colorado. Most of us work from home. But our home base is in Colorado, but we have a 6-state service area. So that includes Colorado, includes all of Wyoming, of course, Montana, Utah, North Dakota, and South Dakota.
Oh, wow. Very good. Do you know, it's okay if you don't, I didn't mean to give you a pop quiz this morning, but when the Rocky Mountain Region ADA was established?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was established in 1992, which is just 2 years after the passage of the ADA. So we've been around for quite a long time.
And can you tell us just a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Absolutely. So the Americans with Disabilities Act is a civil rights law that protects people with disabilities, and it applies pretty specifically to employment, access to state and local government services, and access to places of public accommodation, retailers, businesses, things like that. So again, it's specifically for people with disabilities, so it prohibits against discrimination on the basis of disability. And then it also promises equal opportunity to participate in access to goods and services. So sometimes businesses and governments and employers might have to take some extra steps to make sure that people with disabilities have that equal access. So things like modifying policies or providing communication aids, examples of that.
What are some examples of disabilities that might not be so obvious to employers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the ADA uses a specific legal definition of disability, which is that a person with a disability is someone who has a physical or mental impairment that significantly impairs some major life activity. So it's a really broad definition. It's broad by design because it's meant to protect as many people as possible. So for example, you know, we often think about those visible disabilities, people in wheelchairs, people, you know, using walkers or other mobility aids, but there's all kinds of disabilities that are not visible, right? So we have things like cognitive disabilities, ADHD, autism, depression, anxiety could be considered disabilities based on the way that they, impair our daily life activities. Even things like diabetes and some chronic diseases that impact our organ systems and bodily functions, those can be considered disabilities as well. So really there's no exhaustive list of disability, but the definition of disability is really broad, that it really shouldn't be hard for a person who needs that ADA protection to qualify or be eligible based on that definition.
And I'm sorry if you hear some rumbling in the background. Part of the reason that we pushed the interview later was because we've got construction in our parking lot. And I see they're still jackhammering into the ground and it's rumbling our building. So sorry about that.
That's okay. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the services that the ADA Center provides.
Yes. So So we, as I mentioned, we're federally funded. So our funding comes from the Department of Health and Human Services. And we exist as just a helpful public service that provides information on all things ADA related. So importantly, we are not an enforcing agency and we're not an advocacy agency. So we really just provide information to people on how the ADA might apply to them, what their rights might be, and what their responsibilities might be. So it might be, we might be getting calls from individuals with disabilities, as well as businesses, governments, employers who need to understand what their rights are and what they're supposed to do. And so we do that. That education through a variety of methods, right? Of course, we have a phone line, hotline that people can call if they have questions, and we have information specialists who are on hand to answer those questions, do some research if needed, and really just provide that guidance on ADA compliance. We also provide training, so I've got a couple of trainings coming up in Wyoming, for example, on different aspects of the ADA. And those are really great for groups of, you know, employers or business agencies that want to, you know, train all of the staff on a certain ADA topic. We also do some research on the ADA. So we're operated out of a university, so we've got a pretty good research capability to investigate things like, you know, what are some barriers to ADA implementation? What are the things that prevent people from complying with the ADA, or what are some things that people with disabilities still struggle with even 35 years after the ADA was passed. So technical assistance, training, research. We also have, you know, a great amount of just information and materials that we put out there, both digitally and you know, pocket guides, pamphlets, things like that. So those are kind of our core services at the ADA Center.
Can you give me an example of specific accommodations an employer might make to help someone with a disability be able to have a workplace that's more amenable to them doing their job?
Yeah, absolutely. So a workplace accommodation is really just any kind of adjustment or modification that can be made to the person's job, to the work environment, or to the overall policies of the employer. So, you know, to give you an example, I have an employee who's deaf. So there are several things that we need to do to accommodate her to be able to perform her job. So in this case, that looks like providing sign language interpreters for meetings. So when we have meetings together, team meetings, one-on-ones, things like that, we can have a sign language interpreter there to help facilitate that communication. We also provided some specific software and hardware for her to be able to take phone calls and interact with people. Because, you know, that's a big part of what her job is, you know, one of the essential functions of her job. So really, reasonable accommodations are going to vary pretty widely, and they're going to be very much case by case. So you really have to understand what is the person's disability and what are the limitations that that person is dealing with, and what kind of accommodation is going to be right for them. Because there really is no one-size-fits-all solution for people with disabilities. You know, even if I had a different deaf employee, that person might require different accommodations than the employee I have currently. So it could be, you know, as things as slight as, you know, providing, you know, an extra 15-minute break for somebody to take a medication, or allowing someone to, you know, have a little bit of flexibility as far as what time they start their day, maybe because they take a medication that makes it difficult for them to get going in the morning. It could be things like providing ergonomic chairs. And then you can have things that are a little bit more complex, like providing telework arrangements or work from home arrangements. Sometimes leave can even be included as a reasonable accommodation. So there's no exhaustive list or you know, sort of bank of options, but it's really case by case. And that's kind of one of the things that the ADA Center exists to help people figure out. So if you're not quite sure what your the accommodation is that might work for you, or if you're an employer who thinks, you know, I'm trying to work with this employee, but I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to do on my, you know, side of this equation, we can help you sift through all of those complexities.
I think that's a really good example to have an interpreter for someone who is hard of hearing or even deaf. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a bevy of examples of people who have disabilities that are hiding in plain sight. Maybe you wouldn't know about those disabilities unless you asked someone or they shared that with you. How do you guys coach or even work with people to have that conversation with their employers? That might be difficult for some people.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is difficult for some people, and it's a really personal decision. You know, if you're a person with a disability and you're thinking about whether or not you're going to disclose that disability, there's, again, it's kind of individualized. There's not really a one-size-all solution, one-size-fits-all solution. So what we do tell people is that, you know, they are not obligated to disclose a disability to their employer unless they need an accommodation. So if you live with a disability, but you can do your job just fine and you don't need any sort of accommodation, there's absolutely no obligation to disclose your disability ever, right? So that's the first thing. And we also let people know that it doesn't matter if they didn't disclose their disability when they got hired. You know, maybe they got hired thinking, I'll be able to do this job. You know, my disability won't interfere with the work tasks. And then you get on the job, you get into the job. Maybe your disability changes, you know, maybe your work environment changes. And suddenly you are struggling to get your work tasks done. Even though you didn't tell your employer at the beginning of when you first got hired or in the interview, you still have every right to go to that employer at that point in time and say, you know what, now I'm struggling because of my disability and I need some sort of accommodation. So when it comes to having that disclosure conversation, you know, it's really helpful to speak directly to your supervisor or to your HR department. You know, a lot of times if you talk to HR, they'll let you know that they have some sort of specific process in place for, maybe they have a form for you to fill out to request an accommodation, and really work with the employer to get that process going. You know, individuals with disabilities do not have to disclose what their disability is or what their diagnosis is. They don't have to disclose what medications they take, what happened to them to cause them to be disabled, you know, if that's applicable, anything like that. So an employer should only be asking questions about, you know, the existence of the disability and what accommodation is affected in that case. So employers can ask for a doctor's note that just says, yes, this person has a disability and this would be the best accommodation for them. But again, it shouldn't be their entire medical history or really unnecessary in-depth information about them. So those are kind of some of the things that we would start with telling people. Obviously, you know, when we get people on the phone and we can kind of understand more of the specifics about their situation, we might get into different lines of conversation there, but it really is a personal decision. But definitely, you know, if you need help in the workplace, do make that disclosure and request an accommodation, because if your work starts to suffer or you start to get in trouble, you know, you don't want to get to that point. You want to request that support before it gets to that point.
And so do you guys mostly work with disabled persons and not the employers directly, or how does that work?
Well, I would say the bulk of our callers are people with disabilities or their family members, but we still have probably, you know, 40% of the rest of the callers are employers, businesses, state and local governments, even architects, people who are designing accessible buildings, things like that. So we work with anybody who has any investment or interest in ADA topics. So we certainly do, like I said, attract more people with disabilities who need to navigate their rights. But we're a service that's available for any stakeholder.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. You know, as we were talking, and I know this is not a disability, but at one time I was nursing my children. I was breastfeeding, so I needed to pump. And I was working at the university at the time. And I now, after having gone through that, my children are much older now, no longer nursing, but I never walk past a broom closet without thinking about the fact that there might be some woman back there pumping. You see little fridges everywhere now. And it's funny because if you're not the person using those amenities, you don't know they're there. You know, it's easy to just walk by things without giving it a second thought. But now forever, after having done it twice, I'm like, wow, it's amazing when I walk by and I see that there's like a labeled space for women to go do that. It's not necessarily a broom closet or a dirty bathroom. I'm sure that the work that you guys do to help people create these spaces that are more just more accessible for all people, that's got to be greatly appreciated. And what a satisfying job you have.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting that you say that. It's one of the things we talk about often is that, you know, right now the CDC estimates that 1 in 4 people have a disability. So that's about 25% of the population. But disability is something that impacts us all at some point or other in our lives. You know, just like you said, it might not be applicable now, but at some point all of us are going to have a temporary disability, right? Because we're going to be injured or ill, or we're going to have a surgery that we have to recover from. Every single one of us is going to have some change in ability as we age. So, you know, if we're taking care of our elderly loved ones, or if we're just aging ourselves, it's going to eventually become really important to us that our communities are accessible and that there are people out there doing this work of, you know, helping everybody understand their role in the overall accessibility picture. So it really is rewarding work, and it's something that, you know, I feel strongly applies to everyone, you know, if not right now, at some point in the future. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I had no idea it was 1 in 4. That's really surprising, but it is amazing to think about how much more diverse the workplace can be when all people can get to work and accommodations are met so that they can be a productive member of a team and the workforce. You know, and I hadn't thought about injuries, and I spend a lot of time in the courthouse as a news reporter, and I have seen attorneys either who are always in a wheelchair or might just be like in a cast and they have a little scooter. But I'm glad our courthouses have ramps and things like that so that they can get to work. It would be such a huge loss to the community if someone was out of work simply because they couldn't enter a building, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I have found that every single person with a disability, even those who have pretty, you know, what you might think of as severe disabilities or major functional limitations, every single person has something to contribute and has something, some skill that they can share, as long as they have the right services and supports and, like you said, infrastructure in place. So there really should be no reason for anybody with a disability to be out of work or, you know, not have access to work if they want it, you know, because sometimes it is those simple things like making sure the workplace is accessible and that it's an environment that works for that person.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's a huge advantage to society as a whole to have a workforce, again, that's diverse with people who think differently, who have different life experiences and perspectives. And so, yeah, it definitely makes me just think differently about how we treat people with disabilities and how the progress that can still happen. I guess, how much work do you think employers have ahead of them to make the world an even better place?
You know, my experience with employers has been that a lot of times employers are aware of their ADA responsibilities. You know, employers are well aware that the ADA exists and that accommodating employees with disabilities has to happen, right? That's part of the requirement. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still a lot of attitudinal barriers that people with disabilities face in the workplace. So employers who have, you know, some myths and misconceptions in mind about what people with disabilities are capable of, or, you know, that, you know, having a person with a disability on the job is going to be overly disruptive, or it's going to cost tons of extra money, or other coworkers are going to, you know, suffer or have to pick up slack for the person with a disability. So that seems to be one of the main things I see in the employment space specifically, is just, you know, we know that we have to comply with the ADA, but the next step is to really understand that, like you said, people with disabilities can be a really valuable asset to the workplace, not just a group that we have to tolerate and, you know, make accommodations for. People with disabilities are problem solvers. They're innovative. You know, they do see the world differently. They don't have a fixed mindset around how things have to be done. So they can be very visionary in that way. So I think that's kind of the next thing that needs to happen, is just not getting beyond just the bare minimum of compliance, and really to that level of inclusion and belonging for people with disabilities.
Mm. Would you tell us about a couple of the trainings that you've done in Wyoming over the last year and some of the organizations that you've worked with and trained?
Yeah, so I have a couple of upcoming trainings in the next month or two with state agencies in Wyoming, the Wyoming Arts Council and Wyoming Public Health, and those are repeat customers, so we've done trainings with them in the past as well. We've also presented at like the Wyoming Disability Developmental Disability Conference. We have done presentations with Wyoming SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management. We often exhibit at those conferences up in Wyoming when they're happening. And we also have an advisory group, kind of an advisory committee that works with us it's not a governing board, but they, you know, they advise us on what's important and relevant in those communities. And we have several folks from Wyoming on our advisory committee as well. I think we have a strong, a strong relationship locally in Wyoming.
Mm. And then I found out that you guys have a Rocky Mountain ADA podcast. How long has that been going on?
That has actually been going on, gosh, I guess about 6 years now.
Oh, wow.
It's probably one of the lesser known things that we do, but it's really interesting. It's a really good time.
I haven't gotten to explore this much. I just found out from Kim this morning when I was looking at emails. She had suggested I bring it up. So what kind of guests can people expect on the podcast? Or is it just kind of a lecture sort of based podcast?
No, so the podcast is like an interview style podcast, and we look for guests who are kind of what I would call sort of like prominent figures in the disability community. So, you know, of course, there's always people doing awesome work in the disability community, but then we have some people who achieve some notoriety and some fame, and so we try to get those famous disabled people on the podcast to talk to us about their perceptions of the ADA, how disability impacts them and how they've leveraged their ADA rights. And we've had some really remarkable guests over the years, you know, everybody from Judy Heumann, who is, you know, really kind of seen as the godmother of disability rights. You know, may she rest in peace. And all the way through to like, we just had Temple Grandin on the podcast recently, who is a, you know, autistic woman who revolutionized the agriculture industry. We've had the drummer from Def Leppard on. We've had, you know, other really noteworthy athletes and politicians and artists and influencers. So, I mean, it really runs the gamut. There's a very diverse set of guests on there, but everybody really has something powerful to say, interesting to say. We always learn something new every time we interview a new guest.
Wow, that sounds great. Is your target audience, would you say, more people with disabilities or just everyone, the general public?
Yeah, I would say it's everyone, the general public. I mean, I think it's, you know, the podcast is just about humanizing disability. And, you know, we don't get into really anything technical related to the ADA. We talk about the ADA a little, but really we're just hearing people's stories and understanding, you know, how they, what life looks like for them living with a disability in America, and often having some influence in that space. So I think it's something that anybody can get something out of.
Oh, love that. At K2 Radio News, we love stories. One of my favorite quotes is that the world isn't made of molecules, it's made of stories, which it sounds like that's what the podcast is just hearing from people who have overcome things, showed what's possible. I think inspiration is so undervalued, underappreciated. I love the feeling of being inspired. And I think it's important to have a platform where people can hear about others who had to overcome challenges in their life, which is everyone can relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to be inspired, we've got an episode with Eric Weinmayer, who is a blind man who climbed Mount Everest. So can't get more impressive than that, I don't think.
Okay, so where do people go to find that?
So all of the normal places you find podcasts, right? So you can get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the places that you normally get a podcast. You can also listen to it through our website, RockyMountainADA.org, and it's also on Spreaker. So all the normal places.
Great. And then how do people contact the Rocky Mountain ADA Center?
Yeah, so we have an 800 number, a toll-free number. It's 1-800-949-4232. You can also visit RockyMountainADA.org. We have like a chat feature where you can chat with an information specialist. You can email us directly. You can email us at email@RockyMountainADA.org. We also have all kinds of social media platforms that we're on, so you're welcome to DM us, too, if that's your flavor.
Perfect. Okay, well, Emily, this was a great chat. We are coming up on 30 minutes, so is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you wanted to mention?
You know, I just want people to know that we're here for them. We're here to help. If you have any disability-related questions, if you're not quite sure if you have a disability or how much this would apply to you, give us a call. We'll help you figure it out. And if we can't help you, we will point you to somebody who can.
It was great getting to chat with Emily, and I learned so much. Their website is great. You can go to RockyMountainADA.org to find out more. I was just surfing through and I found some interesting topics. They've got information on everything, but service animals was a topic they've highlighted on their website. So with a little bit of the time we have left, I wanted to cover some of those questions. Service animals are most commonly dogs that have been trained to work or perform tasks for people with disabilities. Some examples include guiding people who are blind, alerting people who are deaf, pulling a wheelchair, alerting and protecting a person who is having a seizure, reminding a person with mental illness to take prescribed medications, and calming people with post-traumatic stress disorder during an anxiety attack. Now, under the ADA, businesses and nonprofit organizations that serve the public generally must allow service animals to accompany people with disabilities in all areas of a facility where the public is normally allowed to go. For example, in a hospital, it would be inappropriate to exclude a service animal from areas such as patient rooms, clinics, cafeterias, or exam rooms. However, it may be appropriate to exclude a service animal from operating rooms or burn units where the animal's presence could compromise a sterile environment. I also found on their site that a person with a disability cannot be asked to remove a service animal from the premises unless, there are a couple exceptions here, the dog is out of control and the handler does not effectively take action to control said dog, or the dog is not housebroken. So when there is a legitimate reason to ask that a service animal be removed, staff may offer the person with a disability the opportunity to obtain goods or services without the animal's presence. Here's one I didn't know. Establishments that sell or prepare food must allow service animals in public areas, even if the state or local health codes prohibit animals on the premises. Laws allowing and protecting the use and presence of service animals do vary from state to state. Again, it's a cool website. There's a ton of topics on here that are worth checking out. Get more podcasts at kdradio.com.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.